Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. I'm Harley Schlanger. I'll be your host today. It's Saturday, September 1st, 2007. Just a couple of days from now, the Congress will be reconvening at a moment of profound crisis. This has been another wild week on global financial markets. There are bailouts. We had a completely incompetent statement from the idiot-in-chief yesterday about how you need a little help from the federal government and a little bit of money, and we'll get through this okay because the economy's so strong, according to President Bush. As I said, completely incompetent. The crisis is deepening with foreclosures increasing, mortgage companies going belly up, banks getting large bailouts. The whole financial system is plunging toward a blowout, the largest blowout in history. So we're going to begin today with a special public statement that was made by Lyndon LaRouche this morning to the American people on Labor Day weekend on how to solve this crisis. One of my associates here described this as LaRouche's firewall chat. So, George, you got the statement from Lynn?
About 30 seconds here.
Okay, and this was done this morning in preparation of this week's activity with the Congress and an upcoming conference in Germany.
I'm ready.
Okay, here we go.
It's Lyndon LaRouche speaking. We are faced with the greatest financial crisis globally, which has been known to humanity in centuries. This goes far beyond the experience of the immediate period following World War II, such as the Great Depression of the 1930s. But we can handle it. The problem is right now that the President of the United States, the office which should have taken the leadership in preparing to defend our nation against the most terrible depression in memory, which is now oncoming, requires us to take special measures through other agencies to protect the American people and other things until the time that we can get the kind of reform we need to get out of this. Our immediate concern must be to save the United States from being destroyed, and that is really a possibility, by what is now oncoming. This is the greatest financial collapse of a form similar to what happened in Germany in 1923 that we have known in living history of our time, in my time as well as yours. However, we can handle this problem. It requires mobilization of the Congress to take an action which will create the equivalent of a firewall against the destruction of essential economy and of the lives of our people. That can be done. It must be done by the Congress within the month of September. There is a certain amount of receptiveness to the idea of doing something about this, growing and spreading within the Congress and elsewhere. That's there. I've produced a proposed conception of legislation which will do the job. I have proposed legislation by the federal government which will go into emergency implementation, which must be passed within the month of September, because the month of October is enormously dangerous. We dare not risk proposing anything beyond the early part of September. The action must occur by both houses within September as emergency legislation, with sufficient support from both Republicans and Democrats in those bodies to create a bill which will resist a presidential veto, a veto-proof bill. If we do that, we may find a depression hitting us in October, which will be far worse than that of 1929-1933. But if we protect our banks, even if they're bankrupt, and if we protect our homeowners so none of them are evicted because of this crisis, then in the month of October and later, we can clean up the mess and start the process of a general recovery. We need to mobilize to do that. Now, many people are coming up with so-called reforms and legislation. Most of what I've seen is absolutely worthless junk. the most stupid thing has come from the President of the United States himself with his proposal. We're talking about millions of evictions coming down now. Now, to understand this, you have to recognize that there has been a collapse, as most of you should have known by looking around you in your cities and towns and so forth. Our industry and agriculture have been destroyed. Oh, we have some farming done and so forth, but we don't have many farmers left. Our people, as in the case of the collapse of the auto industry, we have lost the ability to produce not only products, but to produce a basis for a decent standard of living for the people in states such as Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, and so forth. And this is characteristic of what's happened around the world as a whole. This is our problem. We can fix this, but we must hold the line. We must have immediate emergency legislation with no funny stuff, with no little simple reforms, with no gimmicks of the type I proposed. It must be enacted during the month of September. It must be treated as emergency legislation according to that kind of priority by both houses of the Congress. It must produce veto-proof legislation from both houses of the Congress. It must mobilize Democrats and Republicans alike without discrimination. No one is out to cut anybody else's throat. We're out to save the nation. And that's the way we must approach this. It must be done. And you are essential in this. You must organize people to understand this. Forget all this nonsense. Don't try to come up with some complicated gimmick. Don't try to do a reform of housing. Don't try to adjust the mortgages. Do nothing of that sort. That is absolute foolishness under these present conditions. The only other thing you might do is get the ouster of the vice president. We couldn't throw out the president and the vice president at the same time, and we don't want the vice president to become the president. Therefore, we have to dump Cheney. That can be done if enough Democrats and Republicans, especially their representatives in the Congress, decide to do that. It can be done. Let's do it. And let's get Cheney out and proceed to the reform which I propose, which means that no householder under federal protection will be evicted from their home, and that no bank or chartered bank, whether a federal bank or a state chartered bank, will be closed down. That does mean also that there is no possibility of tolerating putting valuable resources to bail out any other irregular financial institution. The hedge funds must go. The sooner they're gone, the sooner they're bankrupted, they're eliminated, the better off we're all going to be. Because we're going to have to rebuild this economy, including the physical economy. We're going to get back our industries. We're going to get back our agriculture. We're going to get back our infrastructure. We're going to get back dignity. And we're going to take our position of respected leadership among a community of nations in the world. And that's what we have to do. No funny stuff, no tricks, no games. Back to basics. Think like FDR. Act immediately in the month of September. Get the Congress to pass this kind of legislation, which creates a firewall of protection of every essential chartered bank, chartered on the state or federal level. No matter what their problems are financially, we're going to keep their doors open, and we're going to give them federal protection. We're going to give federal protection to all householders threatened with eviction. They're not going to be evicted. The states will help the federal government do that. That is, the states will be the administrative arm which locates the people who need the protection and make sure they're protected. But the states will act through the governor's office on the basis of the support of federal law. That's the way to do the job. Don't go with the monkey business. Forget the gimmicks. We're out to save the nation. If we have in September the kind of legislation I've proposed, enacted as emergency legislation, then we can protect the United States with a firewall against destruction. If we don't do that, we may find a situation beyond recall. So let's be patriots. Let's be neither Republicans nor Democrats at this moment. Let's be patriots. Let's save our nation. Let's create a firewall to prevent the greatest depression that we've ever known. This is Lyndon LaRouche.
And that, as you just heard him say, was Lyndon LaRouche on the global financial crisis and the legislation that he's drafted to address it the Homeowner and Bank Protection Act of 2007. Today on our program, we will be discussing this. We'll be discussing the Homeowner and Bank Protection Act. We're going to be discussing the FDR precedent. And with us today is Richard Freeman. Rich, welcome to the show.
I'm glad to be here.
We also have Alicia Cerritani from Oakland, who will be with us. Alicia, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Now, first, let's set the stage for this. We heard Mr. LaRouche talk about the firewall, talk about the legislation that is essential that he said can't be tampered with if we're going to address the problem. But let's start at the beginning. What makes this the worst crisis in hundreds of years, Rich?
Okay. And following a brilliant statement like that by Lynn, I think he's stated clearly everything he wants to say. But just to say what the crisis is that we have trillions and trillions, hundreds of trillions of financial instruments, which the mortgage crisis, where people were charged far more than they could reasonably pay. I mean, whether they were subprime mortgages, Alt-A mortgages, fundamentally you had a bubble in housing prices created by Greenspan starting in 2001. And people, even who didn't have the funny type of mortgages, the predatory looting ones, still could not meet their mortgages. But this mortgage bubble permeated every single sector of society because every other part of the society had bubbles. And what happened is, as this became the trigger, all the underlying garbage that was there, at least for the last decade, started coming to light in things called collateralized debt obligations and asset-backed commercial paper and all sorts of things that are attached. And this is connected into what a rough estimate would be $750 trillion worth of derivative instruments worldwide, give or take a trillion. Which are at the center of all the large banks, run by hedge funds, which are predators operating, they think, outside the scope of any international law from the British stronghold of the Cayman Islands. And this whole entire system is going. And there is no way of stemming the collapse of this entire system as it interacts one with the other and sets off one chain reaction after another. And firefighting won't work in this. And as Lynn said, you must understand the people to organize this. Forget all the nonsense. There's no complicated gimmick. There's no reform of housing. There's no way to adjust mortgages. That's absolute foolishness, which speaks to the idiocy that Bush said yesterday when he made his quick briefing on what should be done, but also speaks directly to a bunch of proposals that are coming out of the Senate and the Congress, some well-intentioned, some not so well-intentioned, but all of them utterly useless to direct what has to be done. We have to protect the fundamental assets of the population. We have to make sure they don't leave their houses. And we have to set up a firewall so that the banking functions, which are essential for the economy, are protected while the garbage paper is frozen and settled, perhaps on, nickel on the dollar or nothing on the dollar, as we determine it.
All right, let's work through a couple of these ideas first, because sometimes it's overwhelming and there's so much psychological warfare and just plain lying going on in the press. One of the things that people ask me all the time is, well, isn't it just the subprimes? Isn't that the cause of the problem? And what I always say to that is that, well, why do so many people need gimmicks to buy homes? How come people don't have enough livable wages and affordable housing so that they could buy homes the way we used to have mortgages, over 30 years at a steady, low interest rate? And this gets at the question of the combined effects of the Federal Reserve high interest rate policies under Volcker in the 1980s, and then the deregulation of the banking system. And this is where you see what you were just discussing, that a mortgage is no longer a mortgage. You hardly recognize a mortgage these days. Now, how is it then that these mortgages, were the millions of mortgages written in the last few years, were then used to pump up a bubble? How does that work, Rich?
Well, the key thing is, as Lynn has said and emphasized, you really have, and I don't want to go into this, but it's very important just to state this as a beginning point. The corruption in the Truman administration, where even though we carried on until 1963, 64 on Kennedy, with certain levels of growth, but the corruption, the moral corruption, the cultural corruption, set into motion a series of changes and outlooks in the direction. And the adoption of the post-industrial society in the 60s and early 70s, and Paul Volcker's and Schultz's action. Schultz was then Treasury Secretary on August 15, 1971, getting the then President Richard Nixon to decouple the United States from the Bretton Woods system, to decouple the dollar from the gold reserve system.
So the whole system was turned into a casino.
Correct.
At that point.
Correct. And so therefore we're looking, and this is one of the reasons you can't bail this out. I mean, we could try and create a hyperinflation at least 1,000 to 10 million times bigger than Weimar Germany of 1923, if we even tried to do it, if someone was so foolish. But the point is we're dealing with a 40-year at least change in policy. And then as you just said, this was going on. We had the deregulation of the banking system in 1981 and a series of measures. And then we had a series of bubbles, the leveraged buyout bubble of the 1970s and 80s, which I know, Harley, you yourself are an expert on. And then we had the dot-com bubble. There may be some I'm leaving out, but to just bring it up to the point, in March of 2000, the entire dot-com bubble based on building fiber optics and everybody would have 11 telephones and four cables connected to their 16 televisions, right. Whatever the fantasy was, that bubble popped dramatically, and the NASDAQ, which was one of the stock indices in the United States, went plummeting by 67% in the span of 2 months, and the whole, which has never really recovered. At that point, beginning in January of 2001, Greenspan began the first of 13 cuts in what the federal funds rate, the lending rate for overnight funds, so that by the late 2003, the federal funds rate was down to 1%, which was the lowest in 40 years. The intention was to make it possible for people to borrow in, for their houses, and to push the price of homes up two, three, fourfold, with the mortgage companies, the lenders, the large mortgage lenders, which are most of our large banks, making huge amounts of money, sucking out through high interest rates and overvalued homes, or at least the overvaluation of the home, the interest rate was kept down, huge sums of money. Just one example, if a home is valued at $200,000 and then it's valued at $400,000 and you keep the same interest rate, the amount that you collect is double. So this was going on, and Greenspan also saw that you could get people to borrow against the artificial value or inflated value of their home called cash out refinancing. If you had a home for $250,000, you got a mortgage, your home went up to $400,000, you borrowed $400,000, paid off the $250,000 mortgage, and you had $150,000 to spend on the economy. And that has been, Harley, since 2002, the largest sum of borrowing, not credit cards, not consumer installment debt, for the economy. So what happened was there was a complete divorce. And homes were no longer something that people lived in to nurture a family and raise productive, creative citizens. It became an asset, which the population, in its popular opinion foolishness, said, well, my home's going up, I can borrow against it, why don't I get into it? So in a sense, it was the financier oligarchs who created this as a vast looting operation and one last bubble before everything went. But the population's foolishness on this question helped feed it.
Well, you remember the advertisements, and don't live in a piggy bank. Your home is a piggy bank. Use it. Borrow. You can pay down college loans, pay down plastic surgery. You can get new cars and this and that. And, you know, President Bush since 9/11 has been saying proof that we're strong is people are shopping.
Yes.
And shopping on debt. And we'll get into this debt question in a second. I want to remind you, you're listening to The LaRouche Show, Saturday, September 1st, 2007. At the beginning of this program, we had a recorded statement, a public statement from Lyndon LaRouche to the people of the United States. It's, in a sense, his Labor Day statement, or as it was called, his firewall chat. Very Rooseveltian, by the way, which we'll get into in a moment. If you want to send a question to Rich and to the program, you can do that at radio@larouchepub.com. That's radio@larouchepub.com. And if you want some additional material, you can go to the LaRouche Pack website, larouchepack.com, where we have copies of the Homeowner and Bank Protection Act of 2007. We're literally talking about 2 days from now, the Congress coming back in, or 3 days from now, the Congress comes back in session, and as Lyndon LaRouche said, this must be the first thing on the agenda, this move to freeze foreclosures and protect the banks. So you protect the people and the banks so that we can then get about investing and developing the economy. Now, I want to go back to this. One of the questions that came up yesterday, Rich, was in a discussion, Lyndon LaRouche talked about the insanity of turning debt into assets. Now, actually, if you go back to the beginning of this country with Alexander Hamilton, you look again what Franklin Roosevelt did. In a sense, when a bank loans money in a mortgage in a regulated banking system, that's an asset for the bank because they're being paid back. But under a regulated system, they didn't start selling those mortgages and turn what was only an asset that if the mortgage was repaid, they turned it into a speculative piece of paper, which was then bundled, securitized. Now, this is really the root of the problem, the move away from the regulated banking then, right?
Yes, and what LaRouche has described is this triple curve, where the upper curve represents the growth of the aggregates, financial aggregates, which are financial pieces of paper, property titles, bonds, stocks, and the whole mass of those things. And then you have the financial, the monetary aggregates, which is the second part of this triple curve, and the bottom part, which is contracting, is the physical economy. And ultimately, all of this depends upon the fact that as you loot the physical economy and as it contracts, and the financial aggregates, the top curve, gets bigger and bigger, to bail it out requires a hyperinflation of money printing, number one. But ultimately, number two, to pay off the rates of return on this upper piece of paper, you're looting further and contracting further the real economy upon which all of human existence depends. But to then take that's the point that you're making, you could take people trade back and forth financial instruments, and if they're old money on those financial instruments, as you said, like a bank being owed a loan on a loan, then that's the bank's asset. But the asset they've created, and this goes into derivatives and mortgage-backed securities, where you take a bunch of mortgages, package them together, maybe $100 million, then issue a bond against that, and you have the flow of the mortgage that the people pay their interest and principal are passed on to a special vehicle, and that pays the bonds, the mortgage-backed security.
So in order to keep the idea that there's some value in all this paper, you have to have the monthly income stream from the people paying mortgages.
Precisely. And what you've also done, Harley, is it you can see the pyramiding. You have about 10.5 trillion, 10.2 to 10.5 trillion in mortgages. Now these mortgage-backed securities, which are created upon the mortgages, but are totally separate, they're over $6.5 trillion and have their own rates of interest, their own risk. So you've now got, adding the two together, 10.2 and 6.5, you've got $16.7 billion. Then you have these institutions like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which are big secondary mortgage market institutions, which were once part of the government, now independent. They issue bonds and they issue debt. And if you add their debt and bonds, you've got another $4 trillion. So now we're over $20 trillion. So one piece of paper is built upon another piece of paper, which is worthless, which is built on another piece of paper. But people count these as assets. If someone buys a mortgage-backed security, another bank, or even the Central Bank of China, Central Bank of Japan, or Central Bank of England, who are three of the biggest purchases, then they count that as an asset on their books. What they've got on their books is sticks of dynamite that are going to blow up underneath them.
And then as soon as someone can no longer afford the monthly mortgage payment, and now as we see there are, with the adjustable rate mortgages kicking in, the interest-only mortgages kicking into the principal phase, we're now seeing estimates are that there are 7 million mortgages which could go into delinquency and foreclosure. That means that income stream, the small income stream that backs up the huge mound of paper, is now cut off.
Precisely. And so it's not just the mortgages, but the mortgage-backed securities that people hold and the other debt, the bonds and stocks as bonds and other things as Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Now, that, like a Sachsen Landesbank or Paribas, Banque Nationale de Paris, their holdings of these instruments and all the little conduits around the world to hold them. So you're tying this worthless garbage into many different pores of every part of the financial system. And as the mortgage holder cannot pay his mortgage because of an insane arrangement to start with, all of this blows up. And what this really gets at is, what is a financial asset? And what LaRouche, I think, is implying in this is what's an asset is something connected to productive activity. If a bank is making a loan for productive activity, then that is that real loan, provided it's a 1-2% or 3% interest rate, is an asset. If it's making a loan for a home buyer, but it's not at an crazy interest rate that no one could possibly pay in a million years, then it's an asset. But beyond that, all the building up of these and pyramiding of these operations, those aren't real assets. Don't protect them. Don't try to protect them.
Now, let me ask you on that. One of the questions I've gotten from some people is, why is he protecting the banks? So I want you to distinguish between why we would protect banks that would take over the mortgages, but let the hedge funds, the private equity funds, the phony mortgage lending companies, why we would let that paper be wiped out. What's the distinction then?
Okay. That's very good. I mean, he's saying, Mr. LaRouche is saying, create a federal agency, put the federal and state charter banks under protection, just to reference what Harley is saying, freeze all the mortgages, but let the hedge funds go, let all the other institutions go. Just simply, they're not part of the productive system.
The non-chartered bank institutions.
Correct. Exactly correct. And people have asked, and you and I have discussed, why he's saying charter, because even as poor as the regulation is in the United States in terms of the way the Federal Reserve or other institutions will enforce it, there are certain standard requirements, how much reserves you have to hold against loans, that you can't lend above a certain amount to one of your bank affiliates. These things have not been applied, but you would put those into effect with the aim of protecting the functioning of people having savings and checking accounts, the ability to write payroll for companies, the ability for farmers to put their money in the bank and be able to use it for planting. There are real functions in a real economy for a banking system.
So again, we're distinguishing between those investments that actually produce wealth and that are necessary for a society to function, as opposed to the decoupling of that to create enormous wealth, at least on paper, for a small number of speculators.
Precisely. And what you want is one needs a banking system. This goes back to the conception of Hamilton and goes back to the conception of Roosevelt. Roosevelt's idea and Hamilton's was, you need a banking system so that you can carry on the sovereign activities of a country. And as we restore our country to growth, as we start to build up the infrastructure, as we start to build the Bering Straits project and other great projects, build nuclear power plants, you need financing mechanisms for this to go on. If you have bankers who are normal bankers, they will understand how that works. But when you have the upper part of that triple curve sucking everything out of the economy, then the financial system doesn't work. And at that point, you have to take actions of a major sort, and the proposals from Barney Frank and proposals from Chris Dodd and other senators and so forth, these don't even get at the question of what's really going on. None of them that I can see says you're going to just freeze these mortgages and let the paper drift to whatever its real value is, even if it's worth very, very little in the future. They don't do that. And if you don't address the fundamentals, and also, as LaRouche says, reorganize the financial system, turn the Federal Reserve into a third national bank, if you don't take that action, which then puts you on a productive path, those things mean nothing. They're blowing in the wind, at best.
Well, to paraphrase the our former president, Bill Clinton, it's the physical economy, stupid. Now, I'd like to bring in Alicia, who's a member of the LaRouche Youth Movement, currently in Oakland, California. Alicia led a team of people into Sacramento. The California legislature is still in session. They passed a budget 52 days late. It's a terrible budget. It doesn't begin to address the effects of the blowing out of the housing market, which probably is going to put an $8 to $10 billion shortfall before the legislators next year. Alicia, what was the environment that you came into? What was the response you were getting when you came in to talk to people in Sacramento on LaRouche's Homeowner and Bank Protection Act?
Well, for starters, we had initially made a bunch of calls the day prior to going to Sacramento, the Monday prior to the Tuesday we were there, and something that gave us a sense that it was going to be unprecedented was that there were a number of callbacks. We would leave messages, and the staffers would call us back and say, indeed, I do want to meet. I want to figure out what LaRouche is saying or what you guys are thinking about the foreclosure situation. And that went all the way up until our very first meeting in Sacramento, Tuesday morning. Now, it's fun because you get to know the legislation, what LaRouche is talking about, by having to explain it to these staffers over and over again. You get a real sense of what it is. And it's actually, and he just came across in the statement by LaRouche in the beginning of the show, he makes it sound really simple. Mm-hmm. He says, look, no tricks, no funny things, just think like Franklin Roosevelt. And it is simple. It's just that the majority of these assembly people and their aides have made a career out of a system that's completely insane. And so we were able to actually have a lot of fun by putting what we ended up doing was drawing out a lot of their axioms about the way the system essentially doesn't work. And every time we would bring up the potential 7 million households being foreclosed on, all of their arguments and all of their excuses would just fall to pieces.
And so they are concerned that they see the crisis, but they just don't know how to think about it.
Well, yeah, because what's interesting is that we will draw their ideas, their actions to a certain limit, and then they'll say, well, this is what we want to do. We had a couple different ideas that people had a couple different ideas of the legislation they wanted to draw up, but we just expose the fallacy of their thinking. So we're saying, well, now you want to bring in, the way you were thinking about it, about a system that's totally broken down. We just exposed it's totally broken down. You're bringing in ideas that produced a 52-day late budget, and now you want to use those same ideas to fix the situation? And that was the most fun. You kind of catch them in that moment, and they'd be like, wait a minute, this can't work. This isn't going to work. We have no money for this.
Well, Rich, on this money question, here's one of the things that's interesting. You see, the governor of North Carolina has made a series of proposals to come up with some state funds. I know there are about five or six other states where they're talking about already stretched state budgets, coming up with a few million here, a few million there to help with some individual mortgages. Then you have this proposal from presidential candidate Obama, who says, let's find the predatory lenders and create a pool of money that can be used to help people out. And, of course, he must know that a lot of these so-called predatory lenders who did do a lot of criminal activity, they're all bankrupt. They don't have the money to get from fines. So what's the difference on this? Why is it that you have to address it at the top? Is it just the magnitude of the crisis?
Well, yeah, and I think I just throw into this Bush, it's hard to even take anything he says seriously, but he did raise the possibility of either a federal government trust or expanding the powers of Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, which are sponsored housing agencies, to increase their loan limit. He toyed with it. He didn't say it specifically, but it's known people working around him are discussing this. Others have said take the Federal Housing Administration, which makes insurance, doesn't make the loan, but makes insurance for first-time home buyers. Largely, that's its function. And now we start expanding it to subprime mortgages and other things of that sort, which is just to spread the pollution and the contagion into institutions which have their own problem, but it's just to pollute them. But, I mean, what you said is partly, there's two reasons. Because they don't realize that this is the biggest financial collapse in the world. Housing is from what Lynn is saying, is it's a vehicle to take up, because you do not want 7 million people, and it'll be more than that. It may go up to 10 to 12 million on the streets who are going to be there with families with no place to live. It makes on the state level, and I think this is why Lynn wants a state administrator, it makes it really clear you can't walk down a street if people are living on the street or under the bridge, and we're really on the verge of that. And they have to understand that this is busting in October. They have to move in September. It's not like this an indefinite scale. Lynn has said, I don't know how we're going to get through to October. So you have to have these things in place when this big thing happens. But, yeah, the dimension is just, even if they were taking on the housing thing, which we just discussed, which is $20 trillion, whether you're going to throw a couple of $1 million, even $1 billion, to bail out something which will largely be bailing out, as you said, failing banks, many of which don't deserve to be bailed out on the terms of the money where it would go, which would just be paying debt and interest to the bankers. If you're going to put any money in, you've got to make sure that you've put a firewall, which means you've sanitized, and any credit that the government extends is purely for the purpose of keeping people in their homes and rebuilding the economy. Not one penny otherwise. And the just to compare it to...
So how does the speculative debt, much of it is already gone. It just sort of vaporizes like the Bear Stearns hedge funds.
Yes, and that's the other question, which is, you're exactly correct. This paper, you know, even if you tried to bail it out now, LaRouche said, no gimmicks. Don't try anything to do it now. Just let it sit there for 2 or 3 years and see where it settles. And if it why put money into it when it's going to be worth, in the long run, much, much less? Mm-hmm. And on that, I mean, in other words, if it's a $400,000 mortgage and it sinks to $20,000 in value, why bail it out for $300,000? If you're concerned with saving the people, then take the actions for the people. If you want to make sure the banks function, take the actions for the function. But if you're going to bail out worthless paper, which is built up five times what its real value probably is, and which is unsalvageable anyway, and that's where you're pouring your money, and that's where most of these proposals, whether they know it or not, some do. So the Rowhatton faction, the Democratic Party, probably knows that and wants to be bailed out desperately, as the Schultz faction, the Republican Party, wants to be bailed out desperately. But even those who might not know it, that's where the money's going. And therefore, the money will be going into non-productive streams, which may not be worth anything, and the institutions that are running around, the hedge funds and others, many of them are going to be gone come this October, this November. People have to think, and I think what Alicia was addressing is think in a post-October world where the institutions aren't there, and you have now both a big responsibility, but you have this great freedom that they're not going to be there, in at least the speculative hedge funds, predatory private equity firms, and you can now take action that you've been wanting to take for 40 years.
All right, in just a moment, then we'll come back and pick up the question of the FDR precedent. I want to encourage everyone listening to this program today to get your friends, your neighbors, to listen to the opening of this program, the statement from Lyndon LaRouche, the public statement from this morning. That's also available on the LaRouchePAC.com website. And it's a statement that literally millions of people should hear this weekend. So if you have friends, you can send them a link and an email, call them up, use your free minutes on the weekend if you're a cell phone hound and an addict and can't get off the cell phone. Do some good with it. Get people involved. Get them listening to this and thinking about it so that we can build up an organized sense of a surge going into the new Congress on September 4th. Also, you can download copies of the Homeowner and Bank Protection Act of 2007 from your LaRouchePAC.com website. And if you want some further backup material, old copies of the Executive Intelligence Review, Richard Freeman, who we're talking to today, wrote a very interesting article back in 2002 about how the policies of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were headed toward a blowout of the then beginning housing bubble. But you can call up and ask for more material at 800-929-7566. It's a toll-free call, 800-929-7566. So we have a little more than 20 minutes, and what I'd like to do is turn our attention briefly to what Franklin Roosevelt did when, in a sense, the institutions were crumbling, the banks were about to go under, millions of people were homeless, and many, many died from exposure to the cold weather in the winter of 1932-33 before Franklin Roosevelt came in. People who say, well, the Congress can't do much. What did FDR do on his first months to move the country out of the collapse of the Great Depression?
Well, I think there's two sides to this, Harley. One is the housing side, just to situate that. But, of course, that was...
Let's stick with that because I think that's what we want to get across to people today.
Okay. Just so people know, according to federal statistics, roughly 45% of the more than 10.6 million homes in the country had either first, second, or third mortgages. And the government estimated that 43% of all first mortgages were in default, and that they were in arrears for 15 months. Generally, if you're in default, you know, you can be in arrears for 3 months and you start to be put into default. So this is five times that. Mm-hmm. And also, of the second and third home mortgages, they estimated that half the homes were in default on those, with arrears of 18 months. So very, very dismal housing picture. And what Roosevelt did, and he did this within the context of a total package, and I just want to say that, you know, we won't necessarily be doing point for point what Roosevelt did. I think the principle that is what Lynn is getting at. If you're mm-hmm. protecting the population, if you're protecting their homes, if you're making sure the economy and the nation functions, that if you have that principle, you will find a solution. So I'm going to say what was done, but I'm not saying that this should be necessarily what you need to do point for point. So what he did with this situation is he wanted to make sure that people did not end up on the street as they were. I mean, people's houses were being auctioned out from under them, and people know probably from the 30s, the Hoovervilles, where individuals lived in little shanties made of tin, corrugated tin. So in 1933, he created the Homeowners Loan Corporation, or HOLC. And this was issued $200 million of capital stock, which was purchased by the Reconstruction Finance Corporation. And this was really created by the Reconstruction Finance Corporation, but it was created by Roosevelt. And there was the RFC, or Reconstruction Finance Corporation, was not operating on its own. This was done under Roosevelt's instructions. And then it was put in the what was called the Federal Home Loan Bank Board, but I won't go into that side of things. What it then did is it had the ability to issue bonds. And so with $200 million in stock, it issued $2 billion in bonds and eventually increased that to $3 billion in bonds. And these bonds were then offered. They were used so that the HOLC could make loans to individuals who had, were desperate with their mortgage situation, up to 80% of the appraised property value of their house. And they would allow these to be put in equal monthly installments for a period not to exceed 18 years. So that's a very, very substantial. And they got a tremendous number of applications from people. They could only take about half of them. I'll just tell one little anecdote. When the HOLC, as it was called, their offices opened up in different towns. And in one town in Ohio, the line at 5:30 in the morning simply went around the block and wound around and around because people were desperate for something on how to handle this thing. It turned out, and this is very crucial to stress, that with the total package of what Roosevelt was doing, including his bankruptcy reorganization of the whole banking system in 1933, which was not as extensive or as well thought out as what LaRouche is today, and with his public works programs, and with the Tennessee Valley, and with the Grand Coulee Dam, and that whole package, the housing side worked because he was able to, Roosevelt staunched the collapse of the national banks, where 20% of them had failed, a fifth, and most of them were in horrible condition, and he got the physical side moving. So within that context, it was possible to keep many people in their homes, and the rate of default went zooming down so that by 36, when they wrapped up this agency, the HOLC, the default level had been brought down to what was manageable, in fact, less than what it was, or just about what it was in 1929 before the crash. So that's...
Well, then the principle behind this, what FDR did and what LaRouche is proposing now, is the principle FDR had was keep people in their homes and save the banking system.
That's precisely correct. At that time, some of these things were called building and loans, and he created federal savings and loans. But that's the principle, and that's where all the emphasis has to go. If you're creating and you're rejuvenating the economy, I'm very curious what Alicia has to say about this meeting with Congressman Hanta, but if you're doing that, then other things have a chance. And I just want to stress this. Any policy that simply thrown out that's not committed to that type of approach won't work. It's not the technical feasibility You know, and Lynn is smart enough that he knows what he's put together and it will work, but it will work as part of this total thrust to make the fundamental changes and get us away from the paradigm of the last 40 years.
Well, and that's going to take an enormous change in thinking. I want to go back to, we want to get a report on the meeting with Congressman Honda, but I'd also like to ask you, Alicia, from your organizing in with the population, how much of a change have you noticed in people recognizing that the foreclosure crisis, the financial crisis, is not about to go away despite what the president says? Are you getting a sense that people are beginning to panic, get a little afraid?
Well, in regards to anything else we've brought out in the population in the last 3 or 4 months, even the question of impeachment, this question of foreclosures and the question of the behavior of the Federal Reserve and the European Central Banks, it takes on a different quality. People, it's not something people think about in the same way they think about the vice president. It's not something that people think about in the same way as they think about the war in Iraq. It hits them in a different way. And with older people, it's a little more serious because they have mortgages. And you can tell the more freaked out they are is the more they're filling you in on their history of their homeowning career. They'll spill their guts to you. And with young people, it's a little bit different. In some of the areas where there's a higher foreclosure rate, even young people are more aware of what's happening because a lot of the better jobs have been in real estate, and that's what a lot of young people are beginning to get into. But it's still, as a systemic threat, it's still, we have to bring them the power of the institutions and what the institutions can do, because I think that people will continue to look at the foreclosure situation as something like buyer beware, or maybe the lender shouldn't have been so vicious, something like that. But if we're able to develop to them the systemic problem with the banking system, the whole the lack of investment, it comes across a little bit more clearly. But and that's when it has been successful, especially with young people.
You had an encounter with Congressman Mike Honda up in the Bay Area recently. I've gotten reports from a number of these congressmen. Privately, they acknowledge the crisis is big, but publicly, they still seem to be acting sort of like dummies, don't they?
In Mike Honda's case, very much so, yes. Very, very much so. He treated the presentation that I saw and the discussions that we had with him afterwards, he really treated every issue across his board, whether it be the environment or the war in Iraq or the budget, he treated them equally. And which means there's a real disconnect in his mind and, you know, what he actually, who does he think that we are, the population, the people that came to see him speak, who does he think that we are, that we, these things are all just things that he's going to address, or is he actually going to be serious? So the real work that was done in one of the events I went to was when a realtor herself stood up and said, look, this is a serious situation. People should be going to jail for what's happening. And she actually briefed the crowd on what was happening on the ground, and then Honda referred to her again for saying questions that people were asking that he didn't know, so she got a chance to stand up again and elaborate more fully on what she really does understand is a systemic problem.
So the congressman, as far as you saw, has not yet gotten the point that there are a lot of people in his district who are going to be out on the street.
That's right. He still is very much in the dark about this, yes.
Well, there was a call this week, a conference call with a number of state legislators and former legislators. It does seem as though, Rich, in an interesting way, we're getting more traction on the state and local level.
Yeah, I think that's the case. And I think, though, that this is going to, as this situation, which everyone's following on the corner of their eye or very directly, this financial collapse. I mean, just give one example. Standard & Poor's, which is one of the three major rating agencies, said that they think that they warned that profits of the big investment banks will collapse 70% in the second half of the year if the credit crunch continues. And one of the fellows who on a conference call for the National Association of Home Builders, which builds new homes, which one of our members was on earlier this week. This was a conference call to the nation, said that so far their new home sales in most of their firms have fallen 61% in the last 3 months. Now, these are situations, and you have the Fed pouring out, so far the Federal Reserve has probably poured out in trying to bail things out, over $160 billion and the European Central Bank, dollars, and the European Central Bank over probably $340 billion. These are extraordinary moves which are not being made because simply one or two subprime mortgages got in trouble, which are subprime mortgages are really Shylock mortgages. They were should have been never allowed in the first place. But that's we're far, far, far beyond that. And I would just say one thing which is extraordinarily important was that a judge just ruled that one of the Bear Stearns funds, which tried to go for bankruptcy in the Cayman Islands, the center of much of these hedge funds, was just this judge struck that down and said, no, you're going to have to be centered in U.S. courts, which is a major blow against some of these hedge funds. But the point is we're dealing with trillions upon hundreds of trillions of dollars, which can't be stabilized, can't use 1922-23. If you did, it would blow out. But if you don't do anything, it's going to blow out. There is no winning position in the current monetary system. And so therefore, I think on the state and local level, where they at least know people are on the streets. And one thing you could say is that we had in the EIR, people may have seen that Ro Kakis, who is he's the treasurer of Cuyahoga County, which includes Cleveland, went block by block and showed how many of these homes are just on the verge of default or in default and where foreclosure will follow. This is very, very real. And they have to address it, and I think Congress will have to address it in September as many of these other solutions don't work. But the states, definitely being at ground zero all across the country, are facing the situation. And I think on the conference call, which I understand we had 20 to 25 state representatives, there was from a discussion that I was told of, there was a real seriousness about who do we target, and they will be themselves if we keep organizing. Around what Lynn is saying, they will also talk to their congressmen. And some of them are saying, well, let's talk to this congressman on the conference call itself. Well, let's get that person on the phone. And these are people that the congressman just can't say a blow off. I mean, these are people that are part of his real constituency in his own state.
And many of the state legislatures are not in session right now, but they have emergencies going on. California, there's another 2 weeks before they adjourn. But that means they're going to be in their homes. They're going to be in their districts. And listeners should make sure you get copies of the Homeowner and Bank Protection Act and take it over and sit down and talk to your legislator. Some of these legislators are insurance agents. They're small businessmen. Some of them are realtors and bankers. And we've got to get this point across. And I want to reiterate, as we're coming toward the end of the program, a couple of the points that Lyndon LaRouche made. Because I think this is crucial that people get this, that there be plans of action, people who are in unions, people who work with church groups, with political, where there are people who are involved in various kinds of political groups, whether it's a local caucus or whatever, at work, that this bill be brought in and that people be brought up to speed on it very, very quickly. You know, people who say, well, the people who took these loans, they shouldn't have done so. Doesn't matter. They did. And if they're on your block and they get foreclosed, the value of your house is going to drop. And so there's no escaping this. There's no hiding from this. So to get back to let's just review then the central points in Mr. LaRouche's address this morning. There's no way out of this except to set up a firewall and a freeze on foreclosures. I think that's the first point, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we have to have measures to protect the banking system, to protect the banks that will then be able to hold the mortgages and begin issuing credit for production. Now, How can people communicate this, Rich? What's the best way to get this across? If you were out organizing in the street today, what would you say to people?
I haven't. I've just saying to people very directly, if you want to protect the ability of yourself to raise productive and creative children, we must stop this worldwide crisis. It's going to hit you on your house. where you won't have it. You think you're protected right now because your mortgage is a 30-year fixed mortgage. Forget it. As this thing spreads, all mortgages are going to be in problems. And as people lose jobs, if you're earning $70,000 or $80,000 and you got a normal mortgage for $450,000 or $500,000, you can't pay it. You're paying $2,500 a month or $3,000. Can't be done. And the second thing is that, you know, this triple curve. I know it's sometimes not always the easiest on the street or elsewhere.
Well, the triple curve is up on the website now, the LaRouchePack.com, so you can go and visualize it while you're listening to Rich describe it. Go ahead.
But, I mean, you've got, and Lynn says in point one of the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, that we have to write off cancerous speculative debt obligations, mortgage-backed securities, derivatives, and other forms of Ponzi schemes. And so that by doing that, at least the discussions which turned real, I mean, some obviously people walk away or they're too busy to get their license plate or whatever, but the real discussions was on this thing requires emergency action, and Lynn has added veto proof that has to have enough votes in the Senate mm-hmm. and House that if idiot boy under Cheney's direction tries to veto it, it can't be. And so therefore, I think, and I would give people the names and numbers, but obviously work with us on what has to be done. I think governors are going to have to take action, and we already know that with interventions at Governor Strickland of Ohio, that we had some real responses, I mean, from his aides, from people around there, from congressmen who were at some of the events. And so, you know, it's a matter of getting them to mobilize with us on this perspective.
Also, Governor Blanco of Louisiana, who knows something about dealing with the Bush administration when it comes to emergencies from what happened to her state and Katrina, she also is talking about the importance of taking some kind of action on the federal level. Alicia, you're going to go back to Sacramento this week, I hear.
Yeah, that's right. We'll be back there on Tuesday.
And we're following up the initial contacts plus talking to new people?
Mm-hmm. That's right. We're going to actually set up second-time meetings with a couple of contacts and then saturate further both houses to get across that. And we've done a lot of work since the last time we were there, which is going to be the possibility for getting things going is going to be just fundamentally different because we've just done a lot of work since the last time we were up there on Tuesday.
Well, I think one of the problems in California is that people look to the governor of California and they immediately see a blockhead completely controlled by the same George Shultz that controls Cheney. However, California has 53 congressmen. It's got the Speaker of the House, and the legislators in California can certainly talk to their congressmen. So, Rich, you want to just summarize the situation? We've got about 2 minutes left in the program. We heard from Lyndon LaRouche. There's a conference coming up in a little more than 2 weeks in Germany to discuss the great international projects that are necessary. In the United States, what do we need immediately?
Well, I would just say one thing on California. This countrywide, which is the largest mortgage originator in the country, and it originates one-third of all the mortgages that go to Fannie Mae for repackaging into mortgage-backed securities. This thing is not even there, really. It's hanging by a thread. Banks, they got an $11.5 billion infusion about 3 weeks ago.
That's called life support.
Life support from 40 banks. Then Bank of America bought $2 billion of their stock last week. And this is being watched probably moment by moment at Washington and elsewhere because they know that if this goes under, much of the other underlying problems are going to come rushing up to the surface. So I think that the perspective, as Harley and Alicia have said, is this act, which is an act on housing, but keep in mind it addresses every fundamental question. And Lynn's very clear on point three. He says we need a reorganization of the banking system and the Federal Reserve System. So it really is the front of a shockwave that's going to bring in all the fundamental issues we've addressed, although it has definite questions of people from being thrown on the street. But if this act, we can bring the same sort of urgency as impeaching Cheney, it's one and the same question, really, then we have, and if we can raise it with congressmen, that's the agenda issue that they have to think about. And making platitudinous statements is not going to work, and it's cynical. Get them out of the fishbowl in which their minds work and into the larger real universe. Then this thing has a tremendous chance, because people are very, very worried about this. And we can
get your copy of the Homeowner and Bank Protection Act from the LaRouche PAC website. Thank you very much for joining us on the LaRouche Show this week. Rich and Alicia, thank you.
Thank you.
And join us again next week.